The litany of instances of police violence and misconduct is both infuriating and almost numbing. Our guest's new book suggests we reconsider our understanding of policing, see it less as a tool that has on some occasions been used for abuse, and more as a tool for abuse, a system that does considerable harm even when functioning as designed. That reflects more closely the history of the institution in this country, and it's really only seeing things that radically going to the root that lets us see a way out, not a way back to some imagined time in which there was harmony between police and community everywhere, but forward to a time in which policies of punishment don't distort so many societal functions and consign huge numbers of especially black and brown people to the margins. The book is called The End of Policing. Author Alex Vitale is professor of sociology and coordinator of the Policing and Social Justice Project at Brooklyn College. He joins us now by phone. Welcome back to Counterspin, Alex Vitale.
Thank you.
Well, people are offended, I think, morally when you suggest that the inequity of the impact of policing is not a bug, but a feature. I think we tend to think of it as an institution made in a lab. You know, we need protection from criminals, so let's create law enforcement. I wonder if you would tell us a little bit of the actual history of U.S. policing that shapes the role that we see it playing today.
Sure. Well, there's kind of a standard liberal narrative, academic narrative, historical narrative about the police that begins with the London Metropolitan Police formed in 1829. And the idea that's propagated behind it is that it was an improvement over the kind of semi-professional watch that was made up of volunteers and others pressed into service that would walk around at night on the one hand, and a kind of the use of the militia to put down riots and disorder on the other hand. And the feeling was that this would be a civilian force under the control of local authorities and would engage in a kind of neutral enforcement of the law. But the reality is that the model for the London Metropolitan Police actually is directly tied to the British occupation of Ireland. And the person who creates the London Police, Robert Peel, Robert Bob, the Bobbies, had been in charge of the British occupation of Ireland, and it was there that he begins to develop the idea of a civilian force that could be used to put down rural uprisings more efficiently than relying on the British Army, which had been tied up in the Napoleonic Wars, was overstretched and highly indebted. So he creates the Irish Peace Preservation Force, which is located in local communities, which allows for better surveillance and preemptive action to put down social unrest. London during this period is awash in this newly industrializing working class that's come from rural areas. And the job of the police was to both micromanage the lives of this new industrial urban workforce in a way that tried to mold them into a reliable workforce. So there were all kinds of little minor nuisance laws that were enforced, as well as prescriptions on, you know, drunk and disorderly behavior, et cetera, that had the purpose of getting people to go home to their families, get up in the morning and go to work and be productive, and to try to stamp out lifestyles that weren't tied to a standard industrial work life. At the same time, they put down riots, they put down labor movements, they attack strikers, etc. And we can see this in the U.S. context as well, with the creation of forces to drive Native American populations out, to drive out Mexicans from what was becoming Texas at the time, to stamp out workers' movements, to shoot miners in Pennsylvania, etc. And so the book basically argues that the origins of policing should be understood as intimately tied to three major forms of accumulation during the 19th century, and these are slavery, colonialism, and the new industrial workforce.
the definition of crime itself has been very much shaped by the sort of social control impetus of the enterprise of policing.
It was a new way of constructing state power that was more fine-tuned than relying on the army and the militia. It was able to produce legitimacy for the state in a way that the army was not. It relied on brute power. And so this was much more efficient for the state, and the state immediately began on this kind of myth-making of saying that, well, of course, we understand the state is legitimate because these are liberal democracies of some form, and therefore any expression of state power is legitimate. But all of that discourse completely hides slavery, completely hides the suppression of workers' movements. And so the actual tasks of this seemingly legitimate state are in fact designed to reproduce race and class inequalities. And the police are just a softer touch in carrying out that mission.
So what are some of the alternatives to policing that the book is getting at?
Well, what I do is I take eight areas of policing and look at the origins of that kind of policing, what the problem is it claims to be trying to solve, and then look at the literature that shows just how many problems that kind of policing actually produces rather than resolves, and then try to lay out a series of alternatives to relying on police. So we don't need nicer school police. We don't need better trained school police. The whole idea of school policing is deeply flawed. All the research shows that it doesn't make young people any safer. It contributes to an environment of insecurity for young people. It's also often demeaning, degrading, abusive, and at times even deadly to these young people. There are alternatives to relying on police to deal with discipline issues in schools. And there are schools that are using these methods, like restorative justice programs, where the whole school is oriented not towards driving people out of school and into the criminal justice system, but in trying to actually resolve problems. And they use various forms of peer mediation, peer adjudication. We could look at a community schools model that's being tried out in some areas where the school is seen as a resource center for the whole community so that after hours on the weekends, there are classes and services available to the families of students so that if there is a mental health issue, if there is an English as a second language problem that maybe is contributing to financial insecurity, if there are nutrition issues, health issues, the school could be seen as a resource for that rather than just another place where young people are criminalized.
Many would say it's time for a bold vision. I'm reminded, though, of an op-ed I just saw a few days ago saying that calling for universal health care is going to reelect Donald Trump. It seems like people who want things really to change are seen as antagonists, not just of conservatives or the right wing, but of many people who define themselves as centrist. You sort of get this feeling of, oh, we also want this social change that you're calling for, but if you really push for it, well, then you're to blame for anything that happens. It's hard not to hear a kind of go slow, which I just wonder, you know, that seems something we have to fight against as well. Bold ideas require courage, and not least the courage to kind of hold one another up when we're being attacked as being, you know, somehow the real reason that we can't see any change.
Well, I have two thoughts on that. One is that if we embrace supposed reforms to policing that just re-empower the police and re-legitimize the police without really addressing the negative consequences of what they're doing, then we haven't really accomplished anything and we've actually maybe made things worse. The other is that policing is overwhelmingly a local concern. And the vast majority of policing happens in major urban areas, the majority of which are run by Democrats. And so we should not be paralyzed about broader national political trends in trying to do something about this. Wherever you're listening to this, there are local politicians who are empowering the police to be a coercive force in a way that lets them off the hook from engaging in real problem solving that will produce real justice for people. And we can do something about that wherever we are.